1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
We thank you for hanging out. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Thanks for checking out the show in the 1 o'clock hour. We like to do a lot of fun stuff on the show. Occasionally, we like to take a subject and really dive deep into it. And I like doing kind of a podcasty feel on some of this when there's not any real pressing news that's going on. It gives me a chance to delve into a subject matter that I think is interesting. And over the last couple of weeks, I've been looking at Khalil Mack's production. If you go back to the Oakland game, this is kind of where things started, was the Oakland game. Mack has one sack. Now, that's not to say that he hasn't been productive in sacks. Don't tell the entire story of him. For example, I think he's been doing a great job of getting into passing lanes and knocking down passes. He has three passes that have been broken up over that four-game stretch that the Bears have played, along with a bunch of tackles. Was it like almost 20 tackles for him in the last four games? But we haven't seen him menace the quarterback the way that he did in the first three games, where or first four games, where he had 4.5 sacks. So I've been looking at how teams are going against Mack. And the simple thing to say, and it is accurate, is to say that he is being doubled and sometimes triple teamed. We are seeing teams also, starting with Oakland, take an extra tackle out there and put that person out. Instead of saying, let me use a tackle tight end combination on Mack or a tackle running back combination, let me put 700 pounds of beef out there for him to deal with. And at times, we've seen Mack be able to beat even that. Last year against Detroit, they tried some of that stuff, and he was able to still snake his way and find his way to the quarterback. One of the other things that teams do to him to try to neutralize him, when we talk about the double and triple teams on Mack, is the chip. So, like, imagine an I formation and imagine a running back running towards the line of scrimmage to help while they go out on a route. Like, it's not a full engagement, but just enough to knock Mack off as the play is getting started. Another way that teams are attacking him are with stuff that's going laterally. So a tight end may come down and hit him. A wide receiver may come down and hit him. And depending on when that engagement happens, it's legal or illegal. But that's the crackback block. And it's funny because Mack has actually talked about this over the last couple of weeks. He's discussed what teams are trying to do and how it affects him as they try to kind of take him away from what it is that he wants to do, which is to get up the field and to attack the quarterback. So I wanted to discuss it. I'm going to let you hear from Mack coming up in a little bit. But Anthony Heron, part of our staff, really good at explaining things. And Anthony played defensive end in college, made it to the NFL, played there for a while. He also teaches pass rushing. So I asked him about some of this stuff that teams are trying to do to Mack.
When you're an edge rusher and you put your hand in the dirt, or when you're in Khalil Mack's case, a lot of time in a two-point stance, you normally have a plan for how you're going to rush the quarterback. Usually, that plan will just involve that offensive lineman across from you. More often than not, it's a tackle. So when you have a running back or a tight end who's chipping or cracking on you. A lot of times the crack block will be from the outside in, where someone is lined up in a space where it's kind of a tight slot sort of look where they try to attempt to down block you. So a lot of times when that's their alignment and you have a sense for it, if you're Khalil Mack, you're going to get chipped or cracked a lot in pass pro because folks don't like leaving you one-on-one. So a lot of times that will take your rush angle wider to initially sort of crack the cracker and attack that blocker that you think will come down on you. And that beat, that extra beat, that extra measure of stepping out towards that individual before closing and attacking that offensive tackle, closing that distance between you and him to thus kind of get him on an island, then it just gives extra time for that tackle to be ready to engage with you while he's in pass protection. So it stunts the timing of your rush. When you have someone lined up outside of you in a crack position, when you have someone lined up sort of in a wing position behind the exterior hip of the tackle, or even if they're coming from the backfield to be able to help and chip you in protection, it's got a similar effect. It quite often can be more surprising, though, if their alignment is a bit hidden, and especially if they're coming fully from the backfield and they're not lined up behind that outside hip of the tackle. Then when they're coming from that space sort of inside out on you, it doesn't radically change your path as a pass rusher that much. But what it does is when you're attacking the tackle and that chip blocker can appear more from out of nowhere because they're not initially in your vision at the snap of the football, you're still closing on that tackle. And then a lot of times, unbeknownst to you, here comes a running back to hit you in the ribs or hit you in the hip, or here comes a tight end who's maybe in an H-back position who's going to be an additional blocking surface for you to attack. And when that's going on, you got your hands and feet working in unison where you have a plan of attack on that offensive tackle. And then from the chip position that can sometimes be from out of your vision, then they can end up in a position where they're throwing off your rush in a manner that you're not ready for. So where the crack block that can come from outside in, you can plan for that more effectively as long as you see it and recognize it, but it'll take your rush path wider initially, making it take longer for you to get there and engage the offensive tackle. When they're coming from a chip position, it has usually a more standard double team sort of vibe to it mentally, but you're still in a position where you have to try and take on two blockers. You're going to still try to chip the chipper when you see it, and especially if their alignment allows you to recognize it quickly, but that's where your hands and feet have to go to work. I used to, when I was coaching, do something I call a tight bag drill, where you're working on one blocking surface with violent hands and your shoulders and your hips are more squared up on that individual trying to work the edge of them. And then very quickly, if you defeat that one person, you have a second blocking surface that's coming right away where you have to not only physically, but before you do anything physically, we got to remember that your mind has to control your upper and lower body, your hands and feet as you go to work on that second blocking surface. And that's where some of the sometimes less experienced pass rushers, or frankly, just less skilled pass rushers, where they may make a great move on blocker number one, but just your mind can often shut down after you make that first great violent move because it takes so much commitment and force to be able to do that and defeat one guy that it makes the job a lot easier on blocker number two, because after you go to work on that first guy, you have to immediately transition your mind and body to going to work on that second blocking surface that's there. So there's a lot that goes into it. And when I teach defensive line play, I talk to parents a lot about having their kids read sheet music. You know, just I tell them, I urge you to, if your kid's in the band right now and they're young, keep them in the band. Because as much as people don't think about defensive line being something that has a lot of mental exercise to it, it doesn't necessarily from a schematic standpoint, but the mind controlling the body, all those tight spaces that you have to get contorted in, that you have to very quickly in millimoments tell your body, tell your limbs, four different limbs, like you got a drum kit and you got to get the right arm to do something and the left arm to do something else. The left leg is turned here and then the right hip has to move and get skinny in a gap over there. All the things that your brain is communicating throughout all your limbs, it happens so quickly on the line of scrimmage. And so as a defensive lineman, the better you can do that, and for me being in band, I know in reading sheet music helped me a lot with that, just to get your brain to tell your fingers, to tell your arms, to tell your legs, to keep time in different ways and to play notes at a beat that may feel different from one measure to the next. And that was something I found really effective just as I became an athlete, to get different limbs to do things at different times. And that's a big part of defensive line play, where the overall scheme is going to be mentally the simplest schematic position on the field, aside from specialists. But the physical end of it is as difficult, more difficult than any other position on the field, not just because of the toll, the tax that it puts on your body, but because you have to get your body to do so many very quick and violent things in millimoments. And when you miss in a moment, or if you get stalled in a moment, then you're not there. You lose a gap. You don't get home on a pass rush. And then that snap is lost forever.
That's excellent stuff from Anthony Heron. It's you can understand why we have him here as an expert, because not only does he get it, he's good at explaining it. So imagine being Mac in a stance on a play, knowing that it's possible that the tight end that's lined up outside of you is going to hunt you down as the ball is snapped and also block you from the side. When you're focused on the 330-pound man that's in front of you and trying to beat him. So, and you have Anthony saying, like, I have to engage on one front and be thinking about what's happening on the other front. It's an effective weapon against elite pass rushers like Mac. Here's what he said about dealing with how teams try to neutralize him.
Work on it, and you mentally prepare for it. You look at all the situations where they do it in the games. When they like to do it, I mean, and so just getting ready for it, mentally and physically. It's something that, you know what I mean, I'm kind of used to in a sense. Just depends on how aggressive they're going to be early or later in the game. But just understanding the situation of football and knowing what's going to happen and having situations where we can have movement and all those different things. And so just learning as far as, you know what I'm saying, as long as the season goes. But just being ready for it is ultimately what I've been working on.
He's good at dealing with it because he's a freak. Like, he's so athletically attuned that you've seen Mac, whether it's a crack coming from the side or a chip coming right at him, that he will jump over guys. He will move guys aside. He will split double teams in ways that you don't think is physically possible for a guy that's as big as he is. I know that he's a big yoga guy, and that flexibility, strength plus flexibility, I think serves him well when you add in that incredible, like, explosive, in a 5-yard box, like how explosive of a player he can be. It's fun to watch him work. But this is what teams are trying to do against him. And Dan Durkin was on with us a little while ago, about an hour ago, and we were talking about this. And I kind of asked him to help explain the phenomenon of how teams decided that they were going to approach Mac this way.
What you're getting to is what happens on the blind side. So he's focused on the person lined up directly in front of him and how he's approaching him. You know, when is he, you know, with his take on? When am I putting my hands on him? What am I doing with my counter? I mean, you think he's the best power rusher in the league and his ability to convert speed into power and, you know, get guys to set one way and then he's able to use it against them. But then when you're dealing with things out of your periphery that you really can't see, be it, you know, a tight end chipping or a wide receiver chipping, that starts to mess with you a little bit. So you have seen teams start to do that the last couple of weeks. I don't know if, I mean, it's a part of the game, granted, but all it really comes down to is, you know, teams are going, they're basically saying, he is your best player. We know that. We are going to do whatever we can within our power to make sure he does not impact the game. And I think that you're starting to see that have a positive effect for the opposing offenses that the Bears are facing.
Okay, one more viewpoint on this, and this is kind of where the idea for me to do this segment started. I love talking with my guys that I do the football after show with on NBC Sports Chicago. I learn a lot. Like, each week, like, there's something that I pick up from how they watch games and how quickly they process information. Like, they're saying stuff is happening before I can even form the words of what I'm seeing happening. So being able to have those guys at my disposal is pretty cool. Alex Brown just happened to be listening Friday, and we were talking about something completely different. And he came on for a couple of minutes, but I was happy that he did, because I wanted to bring a conversation that he and I had had about this to the air. And I thank Alex, because this is kind of the impetus for this segment overall. He played defensive end. He's ranked fourth all times in Bears history in sacks. He's dealt with this too. So I asked him about what it's like to deal with wide receivers, tight ends, trying to crack you while you're trying to get up the field. Khalil Mack's been dealing with getting cracked by wide receivers. You played you played defensive end. You had to deal with this.
It's the worst.
Why is it the worst?
Because it gets your mind off of what you're trying to do, and that's rushing the quarterback. So you start to peek outside. And these games, I mean, if you think back, think back to that Seattle game where I think it was last year, where Khalil Mack comes in and he strips Russell Wilson. Well, this is a game of inches. So if you miss maybe a half a step or a quarter of a step by just paying slightly attention to that motion coming in, well, now you miss that sack, you know, and that guy does make that throw. So it's something else to think about. And what's crazy is that people haven't been doing it sooner, because he is that dominant of a player that you need to have him thinking about other stuff. So for him, somehow he's going to have to not think about it. Somehow he's going to have to get a tail maybe from, as far as the crack, maybe from the offensive tackle, giving him something on when do they run toss? So if the back is offset, do they run toss then? And then if the back is in the eye, then he maybe don't have to worry about it. If he gets that motion, he knows they don't run toss out of that, so he's not going to get that crack. As far as the chip block is going to be there. I think he's seen that since he was in college. So the chip block is from the running back when he's trying to rush up the field. The left tackle or the right tackle kind of lets him go up, and then that running back gets a cheap shot at him. But I think he can handle that part. It's the crack is the one that kind of gets your vision off of what you're really trying to do. It makes you look outside when everything's happening inside of that. So it's going to be tough for him, but I think he can do it. He's going to have to. He's going to have to do it, or everybody's going to do it from this point on. So he's going to have to show that that doesn't bother him at all.
So Alex gave you the player's perspective on it. It messes with you. It messes with you. It's probably messing with Mac, and he's right. If it proves to be effective, and again, sacks are not the only thing that we need to look at when we're talking about defensive ends or pass rushers, but he's only had one sack in the last four games. Oakland started this, not the other teams weren't even thinking about doing it, but Oakland made a point. They were, John Gruden was not going to be embarrassed by Khalil Mack, and he did whatever he needed to do to make that happen, on top of having the biggest offensive line in the game and a run game that was getting after the Bears. And once Akeem Hicks goes out, it becomes easier. This is why I was so adamant about Mack and Hicks and them needing to work in tandem. If I don't, as an offensive play caller, have to allocate extra bodies to Akeem Hicks, if I can single block on the rest of the Bears' defensive of tackle rotation, it gives me a world of things I can do to Mack on the outside. And this is one of the things that they're doing. Hope you enjoyed that. Back after this on The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
from executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High Hopes. Streaming on Hulu.
So yesterday, or maybe you saw it today, yesterday I was in a mood in talking about Chicago teams and specifically the Bulls, and I was talking about how one of my themes this week has been the focus on positivity, that and that kind of becomes a cure-all to the truth on some of these subjects. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about, and this is from Kevin Fishbane, who does a great job covering the Bears. He tweeted this out a few minutes ago. Chuck Pagano in his press conference today said that compared the Bears' defensive stats to last year for first eight games, and they were, quote, damn near identical, close quote. And then Kevin went to lay out how they're not identical at all. Through eight games last year, the Bears had 21 takeaways. This year, they have 11. Red zone trips, last year, they had 16. This year, they have 30. So offense is driving them into the red zone. Defensive offside penalties. Last year through eight games, they had one. This year, they have 10. This is what I mean by not always allowing teams to spin stuff. Because anyone who's watched the Bears, who isn't Chuck Pagano, can tell you that the Bears' defense isn't the same. It's not bad. It's still pretty good. But it's not what it was last year, even through eight games. Wanted to share this with you. I'm going to take just a small departure to talk a little bit of hockey. Or actually, I'm going to let someone who actually knows the game.
Let's do that hockey.
We're going. Did you see the new one that they did with Chance?
I did.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
It was really, really funny that they had him at gaming, and it was fantastic. Anyway, the Blackhawks are taking on the Canucks tonight over at the UC. If the playoffs started today, they would be 9 points out of a playoff berth, which is bad considering that the season just started a little while ago. Jay Zawoski is kind of our in-house hockey expert. He takes the game seriously. He loves it very much. He does multiple podcasts on it, including the Madhouse podcast that he does. It's really good. He's not a takeista. Like, Jay's not one of the guys that's just clamoring for a microphone to spit hot fire like Dylon. He's a guy that takes stuff in, he thinks about it, he talks to people around the game, and he forms his opinion, which is kind of the way all of us should do it. But this is where he's at with the Blackhawks. This is what he told Bernstein and McKnight yesterday, and it was rare. And a little bit out of character for Jay to be like, I need some mic time. Here's what his mic time hath wrought.
What Keith is saying there, and he sort of caught himself before he bust-tossed Jeremy Cowan, what he said was, we're thinking too much, basically. And since I heard that cut, it was around like the 30th or so, somewhere around there of October when that interview posted.
Okay.
That's been in my head as I've watched every game the Hawks have played. And it's one thing to be a bad team. It's one thing to not be able to score. It's one thing to just not have the talent. They're non-competitive against bad teams. The San Jose Sharks last night skated circles around them for 50 minutes. The Hawks were outshot 26-8 through the first two periods. And you could say, okay, well, you know, bad game. San Jose had lost five games in a row, and they looked like the Harlem Dam Globetrotters against the Blackhawks last night. And I've never been a fire the coach guy. I still love Lovie Smith. I'm still pissed Joe Maddon's gone. I'm like the last guy to quit on a coach ever. But this team, it's not working with Jeremy Cowan. He's a smart guy. I think he knows the game. But to put him in to replace the guy he did with the roster he has, it's an impossible situation for him to succeed. And it's been a disaster. And to me, It looks like the team has either tuned him out completely or just they don't understand his system. They look completely lost on the ice. And Jonathan Toews is struggling and Patrick Kane is struggling. All these veteran guys who are renowned as some of the smartest guys in hockey and some of the best leaders in the game, et cetera, et cetera. If they're not getting it, if they look this bad, something is very, very, very wrong. And I think it's time. This is the 1 year anniversary of the Joel Quenneville firing, and it's time. They have to fire Cowan. There's no other option here.
I don't know where you go roster wise from here too.
Well, look, if your team full rebuild, right? So what you're saying, if that's the case, is you're giving Stan Bowman more time to rebuild a roster. You're turning your back on the guys that won you 3 Stanley Cups. Toews and Kane are coming off career offensive years.
Yeah, that was the time to trade them.
Well, sure, but they didn't. And to trade them in season means you're getting pennies on the dollar. And you're betting on Jeremy Cowan to figure it out with young players, potentially stunting the growth of the team, potentially lessening the value of these veterans. What they should do today is fire Jeremy Cowan. You name Mark Crawford, who's the assistant coach now, the interim head coach until the end of the year. You see how things go. And if it still looks this bad, then you talk about a rebuild. You do it in the summer. You fire Bowman, you hire a new head coach, and you let the new GM rebuild the team. They have to move on from Cowan today. There's no other reasonable answer that will not set the organization back 10 years.
I think that's great stuff from Jay Zawoski in the most calm tone ever. Yeah, they should just fire Jeremy Colleton. Like, he's not like me yesterday. I was getting mad. Like, Jay's just being very matter of fact. I think he makes some good points. I like that he pushed back on the idea of just, we'll trade Toews and Kane during the season. No, that doesn't make any sense. He's right. You're going to get less for it now than you would in an offseason. And I get you're putting more miles on them throughout the season, but don't just give them away. It is watching what's happened to the Blackhawks, and it's not just that after Q got fired. I'm not trying to make that case, but watching what the Blackhawks have turned into, where it was either them not being able to win playoff series or them not making the playoffs over the last few years has been troubling. And they do have some good pieces. You did have guys last year that had great years. Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Dylan Strome, like they had guys that were having good years. They're still really bad on defense. And you saw some of it against San Jose. My God. Guys just stopping. Like, you had some of that. Like, even with it was the empty netter. Even with the empty netter, they thought that they had knocked the puck off and they kind of stopped playing. It's like, no, keep playing. You have to keep going. They allow way too much traffic in front of Leonard. I give him a lot of credit because he should have bust tossed them dudes after a couple of performances, and he has not done that. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Chicago Wolves youth hockey program is presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn how to get your team on the ice to play during intermission of a Wolves game. We are winners. We are the Wolves. When we come back. Oh, wait, let's have a little fun with this before I get to the tease. Since Chuck Pagano is saying that the stats are damn near identical to what the Bears defense through 8 games did last year, and that's not true, I thought that we could have some fun with that. So I'll start, okay? And you can text in your stuff, and I'll read a couple of them if they're really, really good. I'm damn near identical to Jordan Peele, except I'm not a great writer. I don't know how to make movies, and I don't have an Oscar. But I'm damn near identical to Jordan Peele. Tony, who are you damn near identical to?
Jacoby Brissett.
But?
I'm not over 6 feet. And I'm too scared to play football.
And you stopped playing football like freshman year, right?
No, I didn't play at all until I got to my junior year, and I got hit once, and I was like, yeah, not here for this.
And you didn't call out a crack block, right?
Yeah.
You're a bad teammate, Tony. Campy, who are you nearly identical to?
I am almost identical to Peter Griffin. Except I'm a real person. And I live in Illinois.
All right. So,
and you got eye surgery, so you don't have glasses anymore.
That's true.
Peter Griffin does, but I have facial hair.
He does have that. So text in who you're damn near identical. The same way the Bears are damn near identical statistically last year on defense as they were this year.
I think you may have been like, they've literally played eight games. We were eight games, same as last year. They played eight games.
Yeah, that's the only statistic that checks out. 670-11 if you have someone that you're damn near identical to. Back after this on The Score. Some people got the bit, and I appreciate those of you who got the bit. I didn't want you to be like, people tell me I look like Ryan Gosling. No, fool. That's not what we're doing. We're having some fun with this. Although I actually do kind of look like Jordan Peele. We're talking about Chuck Pagano saying that the Bears' stats between the first eight games this year and last year are damn near identical, even though they're not. So that's what we're going for. And some people really, really got it. And I appreciate them about that. Like, for example, this 224 texter says, I'm damn near identical to Andy Samberg without comedic, musical, or acting talent. So almost everything. 630 texter says, I'm damn near identical to Terry Crews, except I'm 5'5", Caucasian, and chubby. 217 texter, I'm damn near identical to LeBron James, except I'm white, fat, and horrible at basketball. But I do own a headband and powder. I'm glad that you own the powder. That's really important. This texter says, I'm damn near identical to Will Smith, except I can't rap, can't act, and I'm white. But I am damn near identical, just like the Bears' defense is identical to last year.
So he's got one thing similar with Will Smith.
Wow. Which one is that? Can't act? You better not say can't rap, because he can definitely rap.
That's kind of fun to say he's eh.
But he can, though.
I know.
But people love hating on him. This texter says, a lot of I'm white is being added on to. I'm getting a real good sense of who our listeners are.
For their athletes. They're comparing themselves to athletes.
I'm damn near identical to Shaq, but I'm 5'11", not athletic, and white. It seems to be a theme. I'm damn near identical to Adam Levine, except I have a terrible voice and my wife isn't a Victoria's Secret model. And you weren't anointed by Prince. Or maybe you were. I don't know. I'm damn near Tiger Woods, minus his gorgeous ex-wife, huge fortune, and posh lifestyle. Plus, I suck at golf. Okay. It's fair. It's fair. I'm damn near identical to Kirk Heinrich if you added 40 pounds and took away any basketball talent. I'm damn near identical to Denzel Washington, except I'm 42 years old, I'm terrified of public speaking, and I'm white. That seems to be like that's the punctuation mark for the joke. And I'm white.
Is that, do I have to start doing that now?
No, don't do that. It might give you a better chance at home. Maybe she doesn't know.
True.
Mitchell Trubisky is damn near identical to Peyton Manning, except Peyton is a Super Bowl winning quarterback who knew how to read defenses. Sick burn, bro. This texter says, I'm damn near identical to Captain America, except I don't have blonde hair and blue eyes. I don't have rock hard abs, and I don't have super strength, and I get winded walking upstairs. But I do have a shield. Fair enough. As far as Chuck Pagano goes, you, sir, are Captain America. Wait, let me see if I can get just a couple
more.
Might be
a more accurate Captain America.
Yeah, you're right. It's a better representation of America. I'm damn near identical to Aaron Sorkin, except neither of my two screenplays has been produced. It's from NIU Dave. Let's see, what else we got here? Some of these I can't read. You know I couldn't read them, you jerks.
Nope.
You know I couldn't read them, you jerks. I'm damn near identical to Stevie Wonder. Not really, but don't tell him. He can see you. This one, I'm damn near. I won't even do it. I won't even do it. We've run out of time. But I thank you very much for your submissions. We're going to talk McNeil and Parkins coming up next here on The Score.
From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked. High hopes. Streaming on Hulu.